I'm Adam Bowles. This is Road Hungry. Today, I return to my conversation with Chef Lando of Enclave Cafe in San Diego. This is part two, so if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I recommend you start there. This was recorded in the spring at Lando's brand new 19-acre regenerative farm north of the city that she just bought to supply her restaurants and further her food as medicine mission. The rest of our conversation is coming up. Since last we talked, I've driven all the way across the country and landed myself back in Florida with Tiffany. It's funny how the universe directs you if you get out of your own way and allow it. When I finally got my car back from the body shop in Portland, I went and picked up my camper, which I'd stashed at a friend's winery in the Willamette Valley, and I readied myself for the trip I'd planned across the middle of the country. I thought I'd drive through Wyoming and Nebraska, see the sand hills before moving on to Kansas City and St. Louis, maybe do a mini barbecue tour before heading into Nashville and posting up there for a few days. Then I'd head down through the deep south, through Montgomery, and on to my destination here in Tallahassee. None of that happened. Instead, when I got my camper, I found that I'd somehow managed to gouge the 7-blade power cable that hooks up to my car and gives the camper important things, like brake lights. I was grounded again until I could get it fixed. I went to a hotel in a Portland suburb where I ended up staying for 3 more days, enough time to diagnose the fact that the shorted wiring had blown several fuses inside my car that needed to be tracked down and replaced before I could get the taped-up cable to send power to all the necessary lights on the camper. It was also enough time to be in touch with my friends, with whom I'd stayed at the beginning of this journey all the way back in August of 2021, at their off-grid outpost in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains outside Santa Fe. They were in trouble. New Mexico is fighting the largest, most intense wildfire in the state's history, known collectively as the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon Fire. As of this recording, it covers almost 350,000 acres in northern New Mexico, and its western edge is threatening my friend's property in Carson National Forest. The fire began not because of some careless camper or someone tossing their butt out of a car window. No, it began because the U.S. Forest Service, over the protestations of locals who know better, decided that it would be a good time for a controlled burn. When done right, these burns are part of a healthy regime of forest maintenance, but this burn was most certainly not done right. So, instead of heading through the middle of the country with my MacGyvered wiring situation, I headed down through Idaho, where I've decided I won't be returning. Then Salt Lake City and Durango, Colorado, where I will return, and back to where I started. You might expect that going there under these new conditions meant that I was heading into some apocalyptic, smoky, upside-down version of where I'd begun my journey, but that wasn't the case. The air was clean at their property, and unless you knew that there were wildfires raging 12 miles away, you wouldn't have suspected it. Even the billowing pyrocumulus plume in the distance could be mistaken for a fluffy storm cloud if you didn't look too hard. What haze there was in the sky only made the sunsets that much more dramatic and beautiful. But there was real danger out there, and I was there to help clean up the property and create some defensible space. I was there, not just at the request of my friends, but it felt like at the universe's behest as well. My time there and the ensuing trip back through Texas, retracing my steps from last year and then going further back and retracing my steps of 7 years ago when I first left Florida for Austin, provided an inescapable contrasting perspective, casting in sharp relief the person I was at the beginning of all of this and the person I am now. Honestly, I'm not sure I can say at this point exactly what the differences are, other than circumstantially. Maybe that's for me to understand later, with more distance, except to say that it felt different. I felt different. Stronger, maybe. More settled in myself. When I started out last year, I was struggling with a lot of things. Heartbreak, grief, uncertainty, not just around the relationship I was asked to leave behind, but also for the world that had already ended when the pandemic hit. I was struggling with acceptance, with the task of detaching from what was already past. Intellectually, I understood what had happened, but maybe the body doesn't quite catch up to that understanding as quickly. More than anything, this open-ended journey was for me an exercise in processing, in letting go. The very nature of this way of life underscored the impermanence of just about everything. It said, there is no such thing as staying put. The earth will always move underneath you, so living on wheels isn't a bad way to adapt to that eventuality. That may sound like giving up to some people, like succumbing to some mistrust of the world where I'm always trying to stay 1 mile marker ahead of the next inescapable catastrophe. Maybe it reads as a cynic's wet dream, a pessimist's cold comfort, but really, it's the opposite. There's great serenity in surrender, in embracing the inevitability of change and becoming fluid enough to pour myself into any situation. It's humbling to internalize that kind of perspective, realizing how truly small I am, how powerless my will actually is in the face of such great universal forces at work around me all the time. And trust me, I was in dire need of some humility. So maybe that's the difference in how I saw these places from a year ago. My struggle with acceptance stopped being a struggle as soon as I stopped struggling. Acceptance, it turns out, is pretty easy when I can learn to remove my desires, my attachments, and my ego from the mix. When I can understand that really, I don't have much of a say in how anything goes, and that's exactly as it should be. My car can get broken into, my stuff stolen, my camper damaged, but it's all okay because it's exactly what was supposed to happen, to keep me where I was long enough to be invited on this specific journey back. It told me it's time to go, but it also led me on my way out. Now that I'm back on terra firma, an illusion of course, but a needed one at the moment, I'll be continuing to release the conversations I recorded on this last leg of Road Hungry's maiden year. But I'm not done. I want this project to grow and evolve from here to include more great conversations, but maybe other things too. I'm not too much of a videographer, but apparently all the kids are into it, so I might have to bite the bullet and start TikToking some foodie stuff. It's a lot, but I gotta keep learning, keep moving, keep evolving. Later this summer, I'll be going through Jacksonville, Savannah, and then later up the East Coast to Boston, New York, and Rhode Island. Hopefully, I'll be talking to more great folks as I go. Any recommendations are welcome. Just email me at adam@roadhungry.com or hit me up on Instagram. For now, I hope you enjoy part two of my conversation with Chef Lando as we finish kicking off the second season of Road Hungry.
Think about like how every culture when I traveled I came up with the concept of universal truths. So
hit me.
Yeah, universal truths is basically where you travel and you see all these different cultures and civilizations where they do something that they all share. You know, so there was sweat huts, spas,
sweat lodge,
putting over things. Something that I grew up with when I was sick. My mom would throw a heavy ass Mexican blanket over me, like five of them, and then put all these like herbs and make me smell them, and then I would just sweat it out. And I was like, we could learn from this. It's like Vietnamese didn't do that, just do this. Like Mayans did this, Mexicans did this,
Native Asians Americans.
Everyone did. Like so many did this. Yeah. I'm sure at some type colonial America did this.
Sure.
We just forgot.
Sure.
Dropped it. Postpartum is a big thing. So even in the Bible, so they say that after having a baby, this is something the American culture does not do to this day. But in colonial America, they did. They had a period that they would call after the 42 days, 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks after having a child, the woman would completely just rest, do no chores, do no nothing, completely rest. Everyone would come in, pitch in, cook for the new mother, and she would just focus on her nutrition and gaining strength back to help feed the baby, you know, breastfeed. So that is like, if you think about it, like we completely forgot to take care of a woman after she gives birth.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, oh, you take care of somebody breaking a leg more than you do, like after surgery for breaking a leg, than you do after a woman giving birth.
Has created a human through her body.
Yes.
Right.
Took 9 months, 10 months to, you know, build. And it's like, oh, yeah, we have all these showers. We're going to, like we love all these pregnant women, but it's like the 6 weeks. And then you see, like, women out, like,
you love
10
them
months.
Long enough to put the shit on Pinterest. Yeah. And once it's on Pinterest, you don't give it's a like shit done. Anymore. Right.
And it just blows my mind. And then I realized that so many cultures, so we have a culture called, we have a holiday. We don't have that many holidays. And the one holiday that we have is called Dai Tang. And it's like the month day. And what it's like, month is just, you know, general word. But what it means is that after a month, so anytime to 4 to 6 weeks, a mother has a baby, they would have a party, a celebration, so to welcome the child to the world. Do you realize out of all the celebrations that we have in America, we have dog parties, birthdays, and everything like that,
gender reveals,
that we don't have a welcome the new baby to the world? We don't. We have baby showers.
Right.
That's before. But you don't, like, so when do people get to see the baby?
Right. Baptism?
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, if you're Christian.
But not like a...
Right.
Not like a holiday, you know, like a special celebration.
Right.
And when I share that to people, they're like, no shit. You know, like they're like blown away because it really is true. Like we're really not going to celebrate life for this child that is entering this world.
Yeah.
The one, we have holidays for everything, celebrations for everything. And it's crazy that we don't. Tons of cultures have that holiday.
Yeah.
Tons of cultures have they call that 6 week period, well now it's like postpartum period, but like they call it like confinement period, they call it laying in period. The Latin call it the la quarantina, they quarantine the woman, so basically, so because she's recovery mode,
right?
It took a lot to have a baby,
and she's also bonding with that baby at that same time.
Yes. You need like the proper nutrition, and that's what we're finding out. What's the consequence of that? When we forgot about colonial day, America did have that. I think they called it the lying in period. I'm not exactly sure, but it was something like that. And this is before the 19. It's not even that long ago, like 1930s, 20s. You know, that there was a period where women would like, you know, they would say, "Oh, they just had a baby, so she's going to rest for the next 4 to 6 weeks." And the thing is, like, so once that was somehow, I don't know what it was, you know, maybe women going to, you know, work, you know, and things like that, or, and they just kind of like left that behind.
Yeah.
And they didn't realize that that was actually a tradition that was put in place for survival, because now we're seeing postpartum depression.
Oh, yeah. It's big.
It's big. And it's not because, like, we didn't diagnose it back then. It didn't exist back then. And they said that, and I read, this whole study about cultures that do some kind of postpartum ritual, like any kind of post-baby ritual, that postpartum depression does not exist because they have proper nutrition and proper rest. You know, the body's recovering.
And then the community around the woman and their child bands together, not only to celebrate, but to help.
Yeah. And then even in the Bible, they said Mary had Jesus in like 40-something days. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's like these Muslims, you know, very patriarchal society.
Sure. Sure.
And to think that in their culture is the one time that they take care of women, like they, because it's like the woman could be taking care of like the future king or something. So their son. So they'll like do anything they can for the next 4 to 6 weeks to like not let the woman do any chores or cook or do things like that. And it's like the one time the Muslims allow women to not do chores.
So, so you went around the world and you discovered all of these things that are like common human things that are built in maybe a little differently to different cultures and whatever, but are essentially getting at the same thing.
Yeah.
And you bring that back to the United States and that affects what you end up deciding to do, which is what?
So, I mean, like, I'm And my whole life is what I consider kind of like a flow state. I kind of just go with the flow with what's needed. And I ended up in Hawaii. So I ended up living there for like 8 years on and off. Mm. And I was like, I just need money now. And I just heard about this farmer's markets that was just starting. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to start some making some like fresh summer rolls. And that we call it fresh spring rolls here, but in Hawaii, they don't spring. So they call it summer.
Yeah, summer rolls. Yeah.
So, and it was just like, I'm just going to make that. And then it was like a big hit. And then all of a sudden they're like, people would ask, do you have a catering company or restaurant? I'm like, oh no, I cater. Like, no catering. Sure. Yeah. Then all of a sudden.
I mean, you're paying for it?
Yeah.
Then yes.
And it's in me to cook for 50 people.
Right.
Like that's my whole life. So right. That it became like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so easy to cook for 50 people. Right. Like I can roll spring rolls, egg rolls, all these things like
all day.
So fast,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I loved making things cute, like we said before.
Yeah, right. Cute's your thing.
Yeah. And then I'm surrounded by so much amazing produce, amazing fruit. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, like, you know, the next, you know, 6 years after that, starting farmers markets, here I am, like being like the go-to caterer in the North Shore for weddings and special events.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of goes because I was just like going with the flow.
And you were enjoying yourself. Like you say, yeah. You don't. Okay. Like you said earlier, like you don't really give much credence to feeling, but I'm sitting across from you and you are somebody who feels great.
I always feel. I generally
like you're
say
great
I'm very
to be
positive.
Yeah, you're but you're great to be in company with, right? Yeah. Like you say you can sense things, right? So yeah. Can I. And it's like I can feel and you're easy to laugh and you're like not you feel fine.
Yeah. Yeah, feelings, I guess. I just don't get stuck on when being down, you know.
Well, that's different.
Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm.
You're resilient.
Yeah.
I think that's resilience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think about it too much.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that seems to work.
Yeah. I go with the flow a lot. I'm like, you know, in some ways it's happy-go-lucky, but a lot of it is I have an incredible work ethic. And I don't, you know, I just love projects. Like, I just love a project.
Clearly.
Yeah, I just love projects. I've always been project-minded. And even when I'll do dumb things. I'll just make videos for fun, not putting it on social media.
Yeah.
Just to, like, for myself and my best friend
just
or something.
Just to crack up at.
And just to laugh at because I just like having fun.
Yeah.
And some people, like, sometimes my sister or something are like, why did you do that? I'm like, for fun? Like, can I just do things for fun?
Yes.
Like
yes,
a child. And I think that's what I think that what happened is people lost that spirit of
totally
of being a child,
right?
And it's like, remember being a kid when you just did things because it was just fucking fun,
right?
And you didn't question why you did it,
right.
You just did it because it was fun and you just kind of go in with the flow. And for me, it just, you know, it kept continuing because I did have always a good support system, and that I would just be like, oh, I'm gonna be a caterer now, okay, cool. I'm gonna be you know, like the making people's food on a day that they're probably gonna remember for the rest of their
right.
lives.
Right. Like there are certain jobs out there, like I got stuck in the sand last month in the desert.
Yeah.
And I was in denial for days that I was stuck in the sand, and because I was in a camper, I could just like stay stuck and live there. So I did that for a couple days and I was like, this is going to be fine. I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And then I ended up having to pay like $400 to get towed out of the sand.
Yeah.
But when the guy showed up, I was like, at that point, I had come to this place of acceptance. And I think what you're talking about a little bit is like, you just live in acceptance.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's like a lot that I can't control and there's a lot that I can.
But what you can control is like, like is in arm's reach.
I know.
And that's about it, right? Yeah. But so this guy comes out and I was like, dude, I'm so happy to see you. He's like, you are? And I was like, yeah, man, because I figured like there was this whole crazy thing. And I'll tell you about it some other time. But it was this whole crazy like signs from God saying, okay, this is what you got to do. And then this guy comes out and I got the God juju going. And he comes out and he's just sort of shocked to see that I'm in such a good mood and so happy to see him. And I was like, dude, your job... You must encounter the people when they're on their worst fucking day. They're the most pissed off that they're seeing you because they're paying $400 to see you.
Yeah.
And you must encounter people on their worst days every day. It's like being a mover.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's got to be the worst job.
Yeah.
But being a caterer, being somebody in, you know, in that,
you're having a party.
You're throwing a party for people on the best days of their lives.
And you know what I realize is food tastes better when you don't pay for it. So the only people that were paying for it are the groom and the bride, or the, maybe their parents or something.
And they don't even have time to eat it.
And but it was just so funny because everybody's just so drunk and they're happy. It's such a great day. Food's delicious. Not downplaying my food at all, but I just think it's even made it. I'm not, like, not going to be naive to the fact that that did exist. That environment,
right.
You know?
Right.
Like, it makes it better. It's the environment.
Totally.
So it was fun.
And it's the people you're with.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's a great day. And I, you know what's so beautiful? I still get, like, text messages or email messages or through Instagram or something. And then just people are like, I love the food. You know, sometimes they'll remember their anniversary comes up or something. And they're like, and then, you know, Lan catered our wedding. This made this beautiful cake, or it had this fish out, or, you know, and it's so amazing because you were part of somebody's memory now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that happened. So you did that for so many years. What brought you back here?
So my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. So now downturn. Right. So so that just like struck, like boom. Mm. Right. And this is where the real journey begins. Not really, because everything is a culmination where I am today, like how I got to Enclave. So my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, never smoked a cigarette in her life and everything like that. And then when I looked up more statistics about it, it's one of the most saddest fucking things in the world, because she's one of the best cooks. Well, she is the best cook in my life, you know, that I know of. And to know that cooking probably was what killed her, you know, in ways. But everything.
Because she, why?
She's
because
around of, smoke. So anytime you light anything, it's a carcinogenic.
It's a carcinogen.
Yeah. So people don't realize, but. There are, that's life. It's a yin and yang. There are things that will kill you all the time.
Right.
You just have to find the things
it's worth dying
that
for.
Restore it, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, being in nature, smelling more oxygen, like, you know, getting more sun. You know, my mom was in Lakeside, and unfortunately there was, like, a lot of dirt, a lot more deserty, you know, wasn't opening the windows because it was too hot, you know. And there are, like, some things that my dad will say. You know, so basically I moved like immediately home, just dropped everything. And I moved home because they said she had 2 months to live. And time is the best gift you can give anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm not stupid to that. So I wanted to spend time with my mom, and then going back to what I feel is one of my greatest skills is observation. I think because of that skill, I was able to help extend my mom's life from 2 months to 2 years. And so that's when I tackled, thank goodness for Google books and everything like that. I tackled if when you look up cancer, it's not actually cancer that kills people. It's the chemotherapy that kills people.
Okay.
So when you start reading about it. And so because they can't take, it's very harsh.
Yeah, it kills your immune system.
Yes. I mean, they're killing all bacteria cells, all cells, good ones, bad ones. So it said, okay. So I talked to my sister, who is a pharmacist, and I said, I think the strategy is to build her immune system as much as possible, because if she's going to go through chemotherapy, let's build her immune system.
Yeah.
So let's look up what we can do, right? Mm. Vitamin C, B12, magnesium, turmeric, ginger. And then I'm like, whoa, all these foods that I grew up with, like I didn't realize, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these soups that my mom would always go to those Chinese herbal things and like make these soups. I'm like, oh, it's the soup with astragalus. And, you know, and I was like, this is amazing. And so I didn't make that connection because I was actually more like taught Western medical science and always thought that Eastern TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, was quackery, because I was actually even thinking like my own culture was like more quackery, because I always like think my mom and dad are a little, you know, quacky.
Right. So. Well, I mean, like there's the old way and I'm the kid and I know all the new ways and you don't know anything. And right, because kids know everything, right?
But then I realized like we took pills that were like herbal Asian pills when we had an upset stomach. My whole entire life, I still have it, you know, like it's funny that they're herbal pills, you know, we still take that.
Right.
And I give them to my team members when they have an upset stomach. They're like, this thing's amazing, like right away. And it's herbal. And so when I started diving into the subject, I went, okay, food. I always knew food was preventive. I didn't think that it could actually treat. And here's my biggest problem right now is there are businesses and companies that won't allow me to say food is medicine. That's my concept, my brand, and everything. But I actually use the word FAM more, the acronym.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I kept with food as medicine because when I found out it was an acronym for FAM. Because FAM is everything. It's meaning you're, so I call my team FAM.
FAM, right.
I cannot be who I am or where this mission is going without the team.
Yeah.
You can't be greater than what you want to be without a team.
Right.
You know, you have to surround yourself by a great group of people. And then you can create it. That's what I'm doing, right? So, and I stuck on to the food as medicine concept because of the acronym FAM, because I loved it. I love FAM. And it says so much more. It's like integrative health. So when they say integrative health, it means it's not just about nutrition. It's about community. It's about your sleep. It's about your circadian rhythms and all these things.
Sure.
So when I started like diving into it, I was like, okay, how do I build my mom's immune systems? That's when like, whoa, this was back then. Paul Stamets was not a rock star, the most famous mycologist right now. And mushrooms is just like the most trendiest thing ever. But like back in the day, that's when I started like reading about fungus, mycelium. Paul Stamets did have one TED talk then that like just was amazing.
I remember it. I saw it way
back talked then. About how mushrooms can save the world.
Yeah, I saw that one.
That was a long time ago.
It was.
So it's over a decade ago. And that's what brought my world to mushrooms. And then I started reading because of my travels. I'm like, so what do the Japanese do when somebody gets cancer? So they go through chemotherapy and they prescribe them turkey tail.
The mushroom.
The mushroom. The Japanese hospitals prescribe them turkey tail. There's Chinese places that prescribe them turkey tail. Then luckily for YouTube, I found this whole video on how in China, there's hospitals where they integrate both Chinese medicine and Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful because it's like here they are using chemotherapy and all stuff. But then they'll have this whole row in their hospital like making herbs.
Because it's not an either or.
Yeah, it can be
both. You don't have to throw out the old in order for there to be new and vice versa.
So the journey with my mom in those 2 years was probably one of the biggest like turning points in my life. The biggest growth, I would say. For my family, for seeing my mom.
How did she react to what you were trying to do for her?
It's, I mean, they've always been, you know, Asian parents.
Well, parents in general, I think.
You know, they're like, oh, they just want to spend time with you. And then they appreciate the fact that I'm cooking and all this stuff, but they just want to spend time with you at the end of the day. You can't really change people's, you know, like if she wanted like a burger or pizza or something, we're going to give her a burger and pizza. But most of the time, but she liked healthy food. So it didn't, you know, so this wasn't a hard thing. So that's
how old was she when she was diagnosed?
71, 70.
That's not young. Or that's not old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then that journey came, and there's so many factors. So I can say that from that point on, I would say like my mom's death. But during that whole 2 years, I feel like was a, like just fast course
in
like
training.
Learning about how hospital systems work.
Sure.
And so when I found out that my mom went to the ER, so there's so many things you go through when when you're taking care of somebody that you have to go and take, you know, to the hospital all the time, make appointments, and then something happens and then she has to go to the ER. Like so many things that happen, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the time was like, oh, she didn't have this much magnesium or something, you know? And I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And one time that really was the biggest turning point was she went to the hospital, and I can't exactly remember what happened, but I just remember because that was the only thing I remember is basically finding out that the reason she went to the hospital because it was a side effect of Norco, the pain reliever.
Oh.
Norco is an opiate.
Yeah.
And so, and I was like, wait, mom's so much in pain right now. And I said to my sister, think about this. She went to the fucking ER because of the side effect that this is like written as a side effect of the pain reliever.
That I was like, gave her more pain.
Do you understand how fucked up that is?
Right.
Like, do you hear that?
Right.
Like, and sometimes it's so funny because she's the pharmacist, so she's just like doesn't see it. And luckily, she's married to like this more like, you know, progressive dude that smokes pot.
Right.
You know. So I was like, let's get her off, and we have to like actually get her medical marijuana at that time, like a license for California. So we weaned her off, we saw that she was getting addicted to Norco because it was very addictive. Yeah, she would like just search for it all the time. And then we got her on marijuana. And so it was just so crazy. Before we got the license, like, I got a hold of a nug and I had a vape pen.
Yeah.
It was a PAX back in the day. Pretty fancy little thing. Uh-huh. So that you would vape, put, but it would actual bud that you would put
but
in.
You would put
right?
The, right.
Yeah. It wasn't like a tincture or any kind of
right,
oil.
Like that weird goo.
Yeah. So that way it was vapor because she had lung cancer. Wouldn't make sense if it was, you know, smoking. And so it was so funny. I remember that day it was me, my dad, and my mom in the living room. And I this PAX is like just a weird, fancy, like, I don't even know how to describe it, like a lighter.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah,
a big lighter, like, yeah, the, you know, but shiny and, you know, and you know, comes in like, it looks like an Apple iPod box. And I'm like, Mom, take this. You know, we took you off this Norco and all stuff. And then she always like asked my dad, should I do this? And then my dad's like, what is that thing? And I like opened the back, showed him the nug and everything like that.
Yeah.
And my dad's like looking in like a little dime bag, Ziploc bag, examining the cannabis flower, you know. Yeah. He's looking at it and he smells it.
Yeah.
And my dad says in Vietnamese, it smells so good, it must be good for you.
Hmm.
Mind-blowing
yeah.
to me. It was probably like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. that is so smart.
It's like some purple fucking diesel over here, Dad. That's what it
so,
is.
So my mom smoked it, and then she felt great, but she didn't know how to inhale. It was really weird. It was a very sure. hard journey. But anyways, when we got her tincture and all that stuff, it was a 180. One fucking 80. Like, she didn't feel pain. She started eating again.
Sure.
She was talking normally.
Right.
I mean, she became a normal person. Like,
right.
she wasn't, like, so just tired and, you know, mm-hmm. From the chemotherapy.
And from the opiates that dope you.
Yeah, they dope you.
Yeah.
It's a dope. And so, and what was crazy, so my dad, being the farmer that he is, it was so funny. So, I mean, he says these certain things that are just so, you know, like, it's so wise, you know, to say things. Because that's,
sure.
that's like a person that's really connected to nature right there. That's a survivalist.
Yeah.
Or a survivalist. And so he, when he smoked the, or when he was like examining the flower and smelling it of cannabis, and I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? Like, why are you mm-hmm. dissecting this thing? He goes, I'm looking for the seed so I can grow it.
Good for him. God bless him.
That like, was trippy because my parents are 70s and I would never think it would be that day because they're super conservative, you know, that I'd be like, you know,
but,
watching my mom smoke pot.
But at the same time, you know, that's something that
saved your life.
It saves your life. And by the way, I would say it's a lot less conservative.
Yeah.
Or it's a lot more conservative to do something like that because there isn't like this forever,
yeah,
you know, thing for your body. You're not putting the synthetic thing into your body, you're putting something natural into your body. Like, for a farmer, it makes more sense.
Yeah. No. My dad was always been the one that was, like, growing up, I realized he was always the one that was really skeptical mm-hmm. about a lot of things in the hospital because it was just went against everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was so, I've never seen my dad so pissed when he got his gallbladder removed because he was, like, so Buddhist.
Yeah.
And they just do not believe. Because they were like, oh, you don't need one. He goes, you fucking need one. Like, you know, like, you like.
I wasn't born with it for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
They think, like, you can live without it. But so anyway, go fast forward. So I learned so many things, you know, and then I learned about the gut and health, the gut and mind connection.
Yeah.
And from that.
I've learned a lot about that recently, too.
Yeah.
And it's actually I'm like going off antidepressants now because of the way I've been feeding myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's like, I'm like, my mom's really happy. She is surrounded by great people and she eats really well. So why did she have cancer? Right. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you know, my mom was getting better and then I moved from Hawaii to San Diego and San Diego is a big craft beer scene that mm-hmm. I was completely foreign to because I hadn't come back to San Diego for a long time because
right.
I was in Hawaii.
Right.
And I was like, wow, there's like these, you know, porters and stouts and mm-hmm. sours that like I was like, this is amazing, you know. And you know, Sculpin, grapefruit Sculpin.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I'm like, this is beer, this is not beer, you know.
Right.
So and then I started like was curious and I wanted to like cook food with pairings, with beer pairings and everything like that. It was another project for me while I'm taking care of my mom. And I start like picking up some books about beer pairings, foods, learning about your flavor profiles and things. And they talk about bitter. And I was always really curious about bitter because of the hops here, you
mm-hmm.
know, is so bitter. Why do they like, you know, all the Western
right.
IPAs here. And they say that, like, most bitter, though, is from poisonous plants, like toxic plants that will taste bitter. But there are some, like, the good bitters that they're very distinguishing.
Like dandelion greens and,
I mean, just even, like, romaine lettuce is actually bitter. Right. And so it was really fascinating. And then I went, oh, poison plants. Or, you know, just like one little sentence that like hit, you know, I remember. And then at the same time, Maya Angelou had passed away. And it was something about how there was a quote. And I was like scrolling through Facebook or something like that. And it said something like how anger is a fire, but like holding on to that, you know, is bitterness is a cancer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm like, I realized my mom had... I didn't understand what being bitter is. Mm-hmm. When you're younger, you don't... I'd like, how can you explain to someone what bitterness is? How do you tell somebody that they're bitter? How do you know you're bitter? You know? And I realize what bitterness is, especially as I get older and I'm surrounded by my friends and family, I'm like, you're still complaining about the same thing, you know, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
5 years from now. Yep. Or even like, you know, 20 years from now. My mom was complaining about the same thing. And it was really comes back down to, and it never got resolved.
Right.
And that was...
That'll kill you.
It kills you. And it really did. It literally did. And it was just... And with my mom, she was not adopted, but like when she was born, her mother had a breast issue. And then in the villages, they would just like, if the mother and father aren't present and healthy... They put you to the village. So she was like the village's child, you know, like that's raised cool. by her great aunt. But she always felt like this, like kind of like, why didn't she get to like live with her mom? You know, like
resentment.
Yeah. And then she left the country. So it was just like a big thing, you know, and always feeling guilt more than anything.
Shame, guilt remorse. Yeah.
And then it was it's not a coincidence that like she ended up getting diagnosed with cancer after getting pneumonia when she came back from Vietnam from her mother's funeral. So it was all, that's when everything was just like, all the puzzles were coming.
That's mind blowing.
You know, all the puzzles were coming. Because my mom was like, she was like, I always call her like the Asian Roseanne, like Roseanne Barr. Crass. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you one thing that will tell you like how she's Roseanne Barr. And if you know Roseanne Barr.
I do. Well, not personally.
Original like comedy of Roseanne Barr, sure. Which she's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome. Because she's like one of the first female comedians.
Oh, sure. You know? When she was on Johnny Carson funny. Back in the 80s, it was one of the funniest stand-up routines I'd ever seen.
She's
and I was
so
a kid.
Funny.
Yeah.
And my mom, I was like, when I was young, I would like watch all these like, they were all like these wholesome shows back then. Mm. And they would always have this little kid like talk back to their parents and always say like, I wish I was never born. And I'm like, I'm going to try to say that to my parents, right? So I'm going to try to say that to my mom in Vietnamese, right? So at one time, like I was like always testing her. So I was, you know, being a bad child and like just knowing her. And then one time she yells at me for something. And then I just said like, I wish I was never born in Vietnamese. My mom, without like even a thought, like a second. Comes back and just quips, then I'll just shove you back up my ass.
Boom.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, Mom, I will do everything you say from that moment on. Like, okay. I was scared of my mom growing up, and I think that, like, people aren't scared of their mom anymore, and I'm like, I was scared of my mom.
Well, because she's going to shove you up her ass. That's why.
Yeah, she was amazing. And she's funny. And it was funny, too.
And it was funny. Right. Like, she was...
It wasn't, like threatening, no. like I'm, like, going to get abused.
A little threatening.
A little bit. But it was, like, yeah, enough to be scared, but then also realize how funny.
But comedy, yeah, comedy is a good tool.
Yeah, it's like Roseanne Barr. You know what I mean? Right. Like, threatening, totally. But, like, funny.
Totally.
So, isn't that hilarious? I was, like, I will always remember that. So that journey came on, and then I realized about bitterness, and I said, oh, that's how you define bitterness. When you, it's one of the ways to define bitterness. Like, how do you define bitterness? You can say, like, you know, you don't know an example. It's like when you tell people, like, being a victim or all these things, like, you have to give people examples, you know, so that they can have some kind of self-awareness of, like, wait, am I bitter? I have been complaining about the same thing, you know?
Well, you know, when you find yourself, like, this is how I know for myself, and this is one of the big changes that I've made in my life because I recognize this very same thing.
Yeah.
I kind of put it in different terms, but it's exactly what you're talking about, is that what I would do is I would have arguments with people in my head.
Yeah.
While I was out walking my dogs in the woods, with people I haven't spoken to in 5 years.
Wow. That's holding on.
That's holding on.
Yeah.
And it was literally going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, I got to a point where I almost died because of my bitterness, because of my resentments.
And I'm going to tell you, probably your gut wasn't feeling good,
too. Oh, no. Yeah. For years. For a decade or more.
Yeah.
I had a terrible gut. Now I'm fine.
Yeah. And what's funny about the whole brain and gut connection, you know, it probably was in the last 5 years, if no joke, like 5 years, 8 years, they've started talking a little bit more and more about it and more studies and how it is more connected. And what's funny is, like, it's in our, what do they call it? Like, nomenclature. I can never pronounce it, but it's like in
nomenclature.
In our, the way we say things. Like, you feel it in your gut. You have a gut feeling.
Back to language. Yeah.
When you hear bad news, you throw up. You know, like, I've had, like, when people break up with somebody or something really bad happens and all of a sudden you throw up. Like, you physically throw up.
Yeah, you have to purge. Yeah.
And when I'm like, yo, you just heard something mental.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you threw up or you felt nauseous.
Right.
I think nauseous is like the best word to like have a brain and the brain and gut connection.
Yeah.
Like nauseous, because you get a headache.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be from bad news. It could be really good news. And and I just think it's, you know, it's in our verbiage, you know, like when we're saying like gut feeling and things like that. I just find it very, very.
Well, so when you say that you don't think too much about, you know, you don't stay down, like you don't. I mean, is that an antidote to that sort of resentment, to that bitterness that you're talking about? Like, so you said, you know, like you don't think too hard about the negative feelings or the bad feelings. Like, you just keep moving and you're a pretty positive person.
I think I am, it's not like I don't get angry or I don't,
for sure.
Like, I let it out.
Sure.
It's like real positivity.
Right.
You know, like,
totally.
People have a definition of what positivity is, and it's like,
it's bullshit.
It's like fake.
Yeah,
it's like
bullshit.
You're trying to convince yourself that you're really happy.
Right.
But a lot of positivity.
Actual feeling.
Yeah. You have to own it and let it out.
Yeah.
Like, if you have some kind of like emotion or energy, talk about it.
Yeah.
Let it out.
Yeah.
You know, don't hold it in.
Right.
You know, you have to like just release it. If you're not, you're not human, you know, in ways, you know, like you have to find something.
Well, you'll make yourself sick.
Yeah.
Right. So you're somebody who can let it out, who can acknowledge. So you don't carry things like that.
No, I don't have anything. Honestly, like I say, I think I feel too indebted to be able
to have that
privilege. I feel like sometimes feeling down on yourself is a privilege. It's weird.
It's called self-pity.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It goes to a point where like, this is pathetic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, why? You're given this life.
Right.
You're not being grateful for what you're given. You're given life. You're given breath.
Well, I really I like that sort of, that you make this sort of parallel between this sense of indebtedness and the sense of gratitude, that they're kind of the same thing for you.
Yeah.
And both things are an antidote to self-pity.
Yeah. I mean, it is. And honestly, I find that I truly, truly value every day in every moment.
That's gratitude.
I really do. And I think people can force themselves to, you know, or fake it or something. And I really value what can happen. You know, so here's the thing. Like, here's living in the moment. It's not just like enjoying and living in the moment stuff. So when it came to my mom's, when we were talking about how sensing energies.
Yeah.
So my mom's death is one of the most bittersweet stories of all time. So we were able, so one of the biggest goals was to get my mom to Vietnam, at least to go back to her hometown for a month. And we were able to do that. So that was amazing. She was able to live her life how free. And that gave me a perspective. I was like, wow, my mom is, it's weird. It's like my mom, and I didn't realize that she didn't live in a country that wasn't her native language. You know, she wasn't able to communicate easy getting around. She didn't know how to drive. Like, there were so many of these things, you know. So, but we got to that place. It was absolutely beautiful. And then when we came back, so I did a pop-up dinner at Green Flash here in San Diego, the brewery. And it was beer week. And this was happening in November. And it was Friday. Like, let me go back one more story. Thursday, I go have lunch with my mom and my dad. And it's near these Asian markets. And I have lunch. And then my dad takes my mom home. And I was getting ready for the beer event. So I had to stop by the Asian market. I was doing some bunch of beer things. And I go to the Asian market and my mom goes home and I see a lady with the same profile as my mom and similar Vietnamese kind of like clothing that she wears passed out in front of the grocery store. And the ambulance just arrives. And I'm freaking out because I think it's my mom. Like, freaking out. I'm like, wait. No, she's not here. Like, I told her I was going here. She would tell me if I was going to be at that grocery store. And I, like, remember the ambulance coming, and there was blood. Like, she fell over and knocked her head on the cement. She just fell down. She's an older woman, and there were some people around her. And all I see, and I just remember just, like, walking up and next to it, and then finally I see a face, and it's not my mom. Mm. And it was so freaky. You know, all of a sudden the energy was just, like, you know, down. Like, what is going on? Kind of gloomy. Like, when do you see that ever? Never. I've never seen that.
Yeah. Especially somebody that looks
like my mom.
Right.
Right. So then on Friday, I have Green Flash dinner, and it was like tons of people, like thousands of people. Like, I swear, it just seemed like it. And we're doing beer pairings and just so busy. Like, you know, we're the pop-up event and doing all these pairings and all stuff. And then after it kind of ends, and this is like Miramar Business Park. Like, nothing happens in this. It's like a business park area. There's not even like homes around here. You're talking about industrial parks. Right. No one.
Office parks and stuff.
Yeah, just like just really nothing.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like around 8:30 or something, we hear a couple gunshots. And I was talking to the director of beer education there, and I'm like, what the fuck? What was that? Was that firecracker? You know, and you're like, or was that gunshots? And then we saw like a bunch of people book it and like get in their cars and leave. Like
out of the event?
Out of the event. Like, you know, like little Corollas or some kind of, sports cars kind of thing. And so we find, so he goes and calls the cops, and he's been there for like 10 years or something like that, the beer director. He goes, this has never, like, when do you hear a drive-by, you know?
In an office park.
So, yeah. And it was so bizarre. And I'm like, this is so, he goes, that's the first time I had to call 911, call the cops, they found the bullet out in the street immediately. And the whole time that I was cleaning up and everything like that, so I got the full rundown.
Nobody got hurt?
No, it was gunshots in the air is what they were thinking. Okay. So it was like warning, trying to get those guys or some attention or something.
Okay.
So I was like, this is fucking weird.
Yeah.
So the next morning, Saturday morning, because I was really tired and I was staying at my sister's house really quickly before I would go see my mom, and we get a call from my dad going like, Dad's going to go grab Moringa, which there's another story, but he's going to go Moringa from this family friend's house. Mom's not right. So I just, my sister, like, I guess, like, had put in an order at Starbucks or something to go grab coffee and stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to go over there. So I go over there first. And my mom's just, like, you know, at home. And it was the the night that, like, my dad and my mom were, like, in the same room for once. Like, even though in separate beds, because she had her own, you know, she's really, really out of it. And it was just crazy because my mom was, like, I just was able to tell my mom everything because I live in the moment. Mm. People won't be vulnerable enough to take advantage of that moment because they just don't think that she was going to pass.
Right. They think they have another moment.
If you live in the moment, you live a life where you tell people everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you live and you tell them like how you feel. I don't want to live with regret, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful. I'm crying because out of beauty.
Sure.
Really. Because, again, I feel incredibly lucky to be able to have that conversation with my mom. In that moment. Alone, one-on-one. And I left thinking my sister was going to have, like, a talk. But she never did because she didn't want to. She thought that if she didn't say it, it would prolong my mom's life for some reason. Right. And most people think that. Do that.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, all of a sudden we gave my mom tincture. She's feeling happy again. I put her in my favorite outfit, which was amazing. And then she's here. Like, my dad came back, cooked her Moringa, which was amazing. Like, my dad doesn't even cook that much. And she fed her Moringa. And Moringa is, you know, known for, like, helping with cancer and all stuff. And he knew this.
Well, it's like a miracle plant.
Yeah, but he knew this. Like, he didn't read a book to know this.
Right, right. Because grandma said so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was crazy, right? And it was always Moringa. That was the last thing my mom ate. And she's in the kitchen, and she's laughing, and all of a sudden, we see her asleep, and then we hear the last breath, right? And it was my sister, my oldest sister, the sister that's a pharmacist, and me, the all three siblings that went to Vietnam with my mom. My other siblings didn't. And my other siblings and my brother they didn't come right away because they thought that they just, again, they thought that if they came, that if they came later, that she'd still be alive, that it would prolong her life. We were weird humans, like the way we deal with our emotions and all that stuff. But I'm like the black, I'm blessed to be like the youngest child, to be having that childhood spirit all the time and to live in the moment more. I'm like, you got to take it when you can. Mm-hmm. You know, the moment, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to live in the moment. And when you do, I realize from my mom's death, the energy of seeing the mom, the lady, you know, in front of the grocery store passed out, blood on the floor, the drive-by, that was just the universe warning me.
Telling you to be prepared.
To prepare myself for not such a shock. I listened. The universe was telling me there's an energy. And then when I said, like, I was to say that I'm incredibly lucky to be there for your person who dies is one of the most beautiful things in life.
It's true.
It really is. To be there for somebody when they pass.
Yeah.
And I was there. I was there. And, you know, I lived in Hawaii. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. for me, like, I would hate it to receive a phone call.
Yeah.
You know? And to be there, to be by her side, to be like the last thing that she sees, you know? That we know of in this life or whatever. Like, right. I don't know what's really going on. But to know that, like, I experienced so much magic out of that.
Yep.
From that moment on, I realized that we kind of, that life is kind of fake because it's magical. From that moment on. Because it was like, I'm like, how, universe, did you just give me all this? What did I do? You know, to give me the joy of all those moments, warning me, like letting me talk to my mom. And it's just like so beautiful, you know, like, and that's when I realized that, like, life is what you make of it. And if we look at history, all the things that has shown to me is that anything is truly possible.
Yeah.
Really is.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that we'd be like connecting on Instagram or like being across the world? I can call my friend in Germany right now and see what she's doing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Taking a photo is like crazy. A video is right. crazy. You know, flying is crazy. We have reusable rockets. Like, it's insane to me that people don't see that somebody had a crazy idea that this was going to happen and they made it happen. Mm. You know, you kind of have to be crazy to think, because everyone's just like, oh, no, it's not. But I'm like, look at history. It's only proven that anything is possible. And with that belief that I cannot prove, you know, it's like funny.
That's why they call it faith.
Yeah, faith, spirit. And just that was that moment on, I said to myself, wow, I realize how much that, you know, people always said, I grew up with my whole life, like, thinking money doesn't buy happiness. Money doesn't buy happiness. You hear that. I'm like, but I am already a happy person.
Yeah.
I truly am a happy person.
Yeah.
And I say, but money can buy you freedom. And it took me a fucking long time to realize that.
Yeah.
I looked up Google so many times, like, money's freedom, money's freedom. Mm. It was not there. Like, you can't find it. Now you probably can. But I was like, this is interesting. Like, why isn't there? Why do not people see that money is freedom? I see a lot of solutions can be solved with money. Like, for some reason, I was, like, raised my whole life thinking that money, like, if I'm going to make a lot of money, I'm just going to buy Lamborghinis and yachts.
Right, right.
Because that was, like, what you see in, like, rap videos.
Yeah, that's right. That's what money buys is shit.
No, it can buy a farm.
Right.
It can buy a school. It can buy a community. It can buy solutions.
Yep.
Instead of trying to beg people for money to figure out, like, how to solve something in this planet or this world or do anything, you could do it yourself with money.
Right.
You know? Create it. Make the money.
So you went from that profound...
Yeah.
experience into the rest of your life, which has been 6 years from 6 years since then?
Seven. Since my mom passed, yeah.
And have now culminated in this new phase.
Yeah. And I had no money then. like, because I pretty much, when I moved back from Hawaii, I dropped everything. I had no catering, no nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were times, like, no joke, I had $50 in my account.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. And I don't ask me how I got here. Like,
well,
it's weird.
That was my next question.
Everyone wants to know. But it's hustle and it's flow. It's belief that somehow the universe will somehow figure. But I'm working towards it. It's not like I'm.
No, right. It's not like, hey, universe, take care of it for me.
No. I mean, I think like there is a little bit of that secret, you know, like people want to like call it bullshit and all stuff. No, but it takes you going towards the goal,
yeah.
towards being. And it's not just that. It's like it's being authentic is key, which is crazy because I'm going to tell you there's a lot of people who don't even know who they are. And they don't know what to do, what they want to do in life. And it's fine, because that's a journey, you know?
Right, and it takes being honest with yourself, which is hard to do.
It's very hard to do. And so when you're truly authentic, and you really are focused on wanting something to happen,
yeah.
I'm going to guarantee you, if you work towards it,
yeah.
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, if Elon Musk says we're going to Mars, we're fucking going to Mars.
I guess so, yeah. That weirdo can make it happen.
And if I'm going to, like, I would never thought that I would have a 19-acre farm. It's crazy. Like, I've always dreamt it like it was, like, you know, the pie in the sky, you know?
Well, so talk about your vision for this place. You opened Enclave and as a restaurant in the...
2019, yeah.
Right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. You opened Enclave. I mean, I have to say I'm very moved by your story. Nice. No, I'm touched by it because, you know, my dad passed away 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Same time. Yeah.
So
he was.
Got you here.
Well, it's what started me. Yeah, it got me away from where I was. It got me away from a really bad life that I was living of bitterness and anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For sure. It was a real turning point in a lot of the same ways.
Yeah.
It took me a lot longer to get where I was going, but I think I had a lot further to go than you did in a lot of ways. I dug myself a deeper hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're realizing it. That's a lot more than most people can say.
Well, right. Yeah. It's about taking responsibility. It's about getting out of self-pity.
Yeah.
It's about getting out of resentment, you know, and bitterness for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find, I don't know. I take a lot from the story that you just told me. I'm going to be thinking about that for a long time.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It really is. And that's something you offer. I really appreciate that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I think when you bring that kind of stuff into the world, things like this happen. Like conversations like this in this place that you've just created for your... Like you've just... So before we started talking on the mics, you took me around this farm and we're pointing, okay, over here, that's going to be where the education center is, and that's going to be where the barn is for the, you know, the stables are for the horse that I want to see under the tree.
Yeah. Like, and I don't have the money for it. I'm just going to let you know. You know, people think, like, I'm loaded with money or something like that. I'm like, no, I'm just going
to... You bought this place. Yeah. You've got nothing again.
Yeah, I'm going to... I'll figure it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I believe that entirely, because there's no... You don't have an alternative, right?
Yeah.
Like, what, are you going to not figure it out?
Yeah, I know.
That doesn't seem to be an option.
You got to sustain the dream once the dream comes. You know?
But all of that came out of this profound experience that you had with your mom taking care of her, where you discovered that your skill that you came up with and were raised with and were sort of like that you inherited, it sounds like, of being able to cook and take care of people.
Yeah,
that way turns into not just I'm not just sustaining you with food.
Yeah.
And I'm not just giving you this like art object of food.
Yeah.
But I'm taking those two things and then adding this curative element.
Curative.
Yeah.
I think like, yeah, I mean, honestly, I want to share my story that hasn't been shared for most of voices here in America. You know,
sure.
We are a country of immigrants and it's built on a lot of immigrants. And I think that it's crazy to think that, because other people that live in other countries truly see America as the place that's painted with gold streets,
yeah,
right? Like, you can live the American dream here,
right.
Like, still, to this day.
Sure.
And you don't have this opportunity in other countries. Like, there's no way I could do what I did, you know, in Vietnam.
Right.
So, for me, like, this place, it's so important. Because I feel like there's no better spokesperson in some ways when you find out, like, this is really my role. I am the spokesperson to be able to get people back to their roots, ancient knowledge. You know, a lot of it was women healing in the kitchen since the beginning of time.
These universal truths you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, and I lived it.
Yeah.
You know, my parents are, I'm the direct link to ancient civilization. The things that were passed down to my dad was passed down for thousands of years, like since the beginning of.
Yeah, you're one generation out.
Yeah.
Right.
It's my parents. It's my dad. And I just want to be able to, and I think that because I've lived it and because I'm living it, that I'm able to see it in different perspectives than other people who are reading about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So with this place, I mean, I think it's going to be, I want to put it on the map. You know, I have big goals now.
I can tell.
Yeah, I want to put it on the map of, like, the place to go, you know, in the U.S., you know, and the fact that, you know, one, that I am a woman, and I say that a lot because there's a lot of barriers that, like, people don't realize. You know, I had to just jump higher hoops, you know, to get to certain places. But then also there were a lot more advantages that I, but same, right? But I would say it's more the other way around, like, mm-hmm. more harder. People don't respect you. They don't take you seriously, right. You know, and then, you know, it takes, like, some way to legitimize yourself, yep. you know, going, oh, okay, she really does know what she's talking about,
yep.
you know, or she did live on a farm. mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. just because I blocked out those memories doesn't mean that it didn't exist. It's not a glamorous thing. Like, my life is not glamorous, you know, but to me it is. You know what I mean? Like,
this is not without glamour. This is really not without glamour.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I know, I don't mean it like that, but I'm just like.
By the time this comes out into the world, there will be pictures of your life on Instagram that I put up. So I direct everybody listening to go look at the not glamour of the, you know, the beautiful plants and flowers and everything that we live, that she's living around.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It really is. It hasn't hit me yet. It is just always just like utter shock. I think it's always going to be shock. I think when you truly live life, like, you know, every day, like moment by moment, you're always going to be just finding beauty in everything. You know, you will, you really will. I mean, that's all you can, really. So on that, I just want to say that the biggest motivating factor, though, was money is freedom. And with that motivation, you know, because I got a job at Adobe. I was making six figures from stock options and things. And and I was like, why was I shooting for middle class? Like, I never wanted to be a millionaire, mm-hmm. you know, or anything like that. And I'm not a millionaire, but, like, I have the land, you know.
Right.
But, like, it was just like, why didn't I shoot to be one? Mm. You know, like, it was never my goal. So you're not going to become one if that wasn't your goal, you know. And so I'm like, you know what? Let's just see if it will happen. If, you know, let's make that as a goal. Let's do it in a way, though, that I'm happy waking up every single day.
But see, it doesn't strike me that it's the money that is the goal.
But you have to have it.
It's part of it.
Yeah, it's a big part of it, though.
But I don't know. I know, like,
you know, you just need it to feel what you want.
My
you know, what I mean? It's a source of energy. You know, what I mean?
Right. But at the same time, like, I don't know, like, I have a my ex's stepfather would say, like, if owning parking garages would make me $1 million, I'd own parking garages. And it's like, I wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah. No. And that's what I said, that it has to be money, though, with something that I enjoy waking up to every day.
So how do you marry the two?
Yeah.
Because it can't be all about that. Right.
No, I can't. But it is the driving force to get what you want.
But
yeah.
But if you do the work, right? Like, it seems like you're saying, if you do the honest work, it comes. If you've got your sight set,
I guarantee you, there is no story in life where you're not going to get something out of something for working so hard.
That's right.
Really? There.
That's right.
I would find me one. You know.
Right.
Like, maybe there are some.
This podcast perhaps could be an example. TBD.
Yes, just keep at it.
But I'm not stopping.
Yeah, just keep at it.
Yeah.
They always say 10,000 hours, 10 years.
Yeah.
That's like the magic number.
That's the magic number.
That's the magic number. It really is. 10,000. And then some people just figure out younger, we're too. And then if you just don't let society pressure, like, affect you, because everyone's like, oh, you're too old for this shit. You're too, or we're so obsessed.
What are you trying to say, Lando?
I'm older than you, just so you know.
Okay.
So like, but I'm just saying like, it's like, but I'm saying like, people are so obsessed with like, oh, he did it at 20 or he did it. I'm like, fuck, but like, guess what? I did this at 20 and it was awesome.
Right.
And I don't care.
Right.
He got drunk in Tijuana and doing it. Right. What I mean?
And it was rad, okay?
Yeah, and he didn't because he worked all his fucking life.
Right.
Or like, no, I'm just not saying, I'm not, you know, like, I think it's awesome when some people figure it out so young.
Right.
But then I also think it's like, we all have different journeys and different timelines.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's something that needs to be expressed.
Right.
I think it's more awesome when you're 90 and you're still like surfing or you're still like doing stuff.
Or you decide to write a book.
Yeah.
And at 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I love. I actually look up for inspirations for that.
Yeah.
And the guy who wrote The River Runs Through It.
Yeah.
He wrote that book at like 70 something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because it was kind of based on his life story a bit, but he was a professor. And I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
I love like Julia Child, 40,
right.
Started her career. Was that like McDonald's guy?
Well, after she
guy.
Was a spy.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, but like she became cooking, you know, like it was a whole different, like you can always start anew. That's the thing. Like you can always be somebody.
Sure.
You don't have to like stick to what you've been doing if you didn't like it just because that's what people think you'd like, you know, or something. But yeah, but find the inspirations for the people who have done it at certain ages. Like I'll focus on that author and Julia Child and Ray Kroc, 55, right? Who started McDonald's? 55.
Yeah.
You know? Fucking Biden, he's 87 or whatever. He's fucking president.
Not 87.
Well,
but 80. No, he's 80.
Yeah. But it's like, are you going to be 80 and decide to be president, like run for president?
Oh, he decided he was going to be president when he was 20.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you're going to run, but you're still going to run.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Just to take the effort to run. When I see all these old people, like, in government, I'm like, where is that energy?
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, I wish
That's dark energy.
No, but
that's coming from the wrong place.
I'm just saying, like, I wish that's my goal, is to, like, have that just like, but for me, a childhood spirit. Just continue that. Don't ever try to kill my childhood spirit. You know, like,
I'd
rather
die. I think
that would
be impossible. I think that would be impossible. Hey, Lando, it was really nice talking to you.
Same. Yeah. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having me out. It's an honor. It was really lovely to get to meet you and to walk around. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Like I said, I'll be traveling around the Eastern time zone for a while now, so if you have any recommendations of places to eat or people to talk to, shout at me over Insta or send me an email at adam@roadhungry.com. I'm really excited for this next chapter, and I hope I'll see you out there.